Good morning, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are here again for Turning Towards Life a little bit later than planned this morning. We're in far-flung places, not our usual places. Lizzie is in Scotland and I am in Wales. We're both normally in London, and we're grappling with the Wi-Fi and internet and phone systems where we are, but we're here. And I'm feeling so glad to be here for what I think, Lizzie, is now our 150th week.
Yay!
Which seems to me a remarkable and wonderful thing to have been keeping going for this time. So I want to say welcome to everyone. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for keeping on joining us. Welcome to us if you're new to this conversation. We are so glad to have you with us for what has been an unfolding, very real and life-giving conversation, I know, Lizzie, for you and I, for now many, many months. And one of the great joys of it is that we get to bring this conversation to a wide audience from across the world. And it's not even just an audience, but really, in many ways, a community. So I want to welcome all of you who are joining us again this morning, and to invite you, even if you're someone who only, no, that's a funny way to say it, but if you mainly hear us by listening on the audio podcast, just to say that you can always come and find us in our Facebook group. Just search for Turning Towards Life, and there's a wonderful way of joining in the conversation there in the comments, which you're always welcome to do. And this week we have an extraordinary piece of writing by Lizzie to begin with, which I'm really grateful for, Lizzie. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Good morning. And it's lovely to be here again and to continually feel the rhythm of this. And I was just thinking 150 episodes we have now, and there are 52 weeks in a year. So I think we're coming up to 3 years of doing this. And that's just completely extraordinary to me how it's become such a rhythm. So hello, everyone. And this week we have this poem, which I've actually just named as I've been sitting here waiting to go live. And I've called it "The Dark Bathing in Warm in Warmth Brings Light." And this comes from a client session that I did. So I was coaching somebody this week, and this poem tumbled out of me as I was very moved by the work that we did together. And really feeling like the yearning to articulate what this thing is that we can do to bring light upon situations that feel very stuck, that feel very confounding and like we don't know what to do about them. So this is this thing that tumbled out of me, and let's see where it goes, Justin. So I'm going to read. "The dark bathing in warmth brings light. Not so easily felt, sorry, not so easily named, but felt, just outside of my vision. Who is this elusive and powerful part of life calling my name and disappearing as I turn to see? I know now that it has to feel safe to be in the light, so I reassure and don't look too directly on as she inches forward to talk. When she talks, there's hardness and meanness there, and in my safety, I can hear her without mistaking her as the whole of me. How often have I done that? I hold her in my hands, in my heart, let her cry and rage and be mean, as long as she will let me. And all the while, I try to hold this as just a part, just some of me, not all. And this way I can hold, I can be with, I can witness, and most gladly I can learn and let the passion and purpose flow from this part to all of me, with all it has to give. All these years she's been banished and afraid, and now she comes to sit with us, sits and stay and says it like it is, as she has space. Not all the space she sometimes wants, but space nonetheless, enough to be fully heard, learned from, embraced and treated as important and equal. May I always see this part with my heart and remember my faith in the times of fear. She is here to love me too. She doesn't have the power to take me over if I turn and look with loving eyes and an open and courageous heart. She is me, I am her, and I regain so much by turning into her darkness with my light shining, faithful and bright, my warmth thick and soft."
Wow. That's very appreciated hearing you read that, Lizzie. I'm going to read it in its entirety too. And here's an invitation I have to all of you who are listening and to all of us, which is, see if, as I read this, you can find the parts of you that are just outside your vision, the parts that are hard to welcome, and see what it's like just to soften into the possibility of welcoming them with these words. Not so easily named, but felt, just outside of my vision. Who is this elusive and powerful part of life calling my name and disappearing as I turn to see? I know now that it has to feel safe to be in the light. So I reassure, and I don't look too directly on as she inches forward to talk. When she talks, there's hardness and meanness there, and in my safety, I can hear her without mistaking her as the whole of me. How often have I done that? I hold her in my hands, in my heart, let her cry and rage and be me, as long as she will let me, and all the while, I try to hold this as just a part, just some of me, not all. And this way, I can hold, I can be with, I can witness, and most gladly, I can learn and let the passion and purpose flow from this part to all of me with all it has to give. All these years, she's been banished and afraid, and now she comes to sit with us, sits and says it like it is, and she has space. Not all the space she sometimes wants, but space nonetheless. Enough to be fully heard, learned from, embraced, and treated as important and equal. May I always see this part with my heart and remember my faith in the times of fear. She is here to love me too. She doesn't have the power to take me over if I turn and look with loving eyes and an open and courageous heart. She is me. I am her. And I regain so much by turning into her darkness with my light shining, faithful and bright, my warmth thick and soft.
Thank you, Justin. I feel a great kind of relief wash over me reading and then listening. And I feel like this is the place to turn when I really don't know what to do about something. The part of me that comes forth that is destructive or harsh or not in line with who I want to be. And so many times I feel like there's a way I can just try and move away and just pretend it's not there or something. And so the relief to have a way to turn towards and to encounter and turn my body to face the thing rather than just put it in a bag somewhere that I don't have to deal with. And it feels very powerful to know that I can do this in my life, that I don't have to continue in the same kind of pattern of something that doesn't serve me, but that I can work with it and in some way bring the truth of its power to light rather than the distortion of its power. So both ways are powerful, that an aspect is either held down or welcomed, but it feels like a different kind of power when the welcome happens, like a power in freedom, a powerful breath out that lets me lead with a different part rather than the power that takes over and I can't control it, or like it has some kind of life of its own that's not really in alignment with the way I want to be in the world. And it feels like this is just an ongoing deepening of the discovery of all the different parts of us, which will most likely not end. This isn't a fix or something. It feels like it also then gives permission for other less visible, even less visible parts to come. And for this full spectrum of humanness to be allowed through my life, because I can see it and I can feel it rather than have to cut things off because they're not welcome here. And of course, then with other people too, I can find a way to be with parts that I don't like or I don't think are welcome or humane or whatever else. So it feels like a very big opening into welcoming more of humanity, basically.
I noticed as you were reading, Lizzie, and I was reading too, what a relief it is every time, actually, for me to be reminded that to be me, to be a person, is never just one thing. That we're so helpful to see ourselves as like a family of parts, of different parts, each of which has a different voice and a different history and a different set of commitments and a different orientation and also different kind of hurts as well, that our parts have been hurt in their own ways. What a gift it is, what a freedom it is. Because as you were talking, and also as you and I were reading, I was reminding myself of all the times there's this place in what you've written where you say, I'm not her and she's not me, she's not all of me. When I realized that I have very often been in a kind of an internal fight with myself without realizing I was in a fight. Mm. Like there's a part of me that I really don't want to be present. And when it is present, when it comes forward and expresses itself through me, I'm enormously self-critical, easily ashamed. And just because I don't know that I'm made up of parts doesn't mean that I'm not, and doesn't mean that the conflicts and wrangles between them isn't going on. So I can really, it's a really common feeling for me to be at odds with myself, or to be in a fight with myself. And when I'm in a fight with myself, it so profoundly affects the way I can be with other people. It's so hard to be compassionate to other people and present to other people and open to other people, because broadly I'm not being at all open with myself. And so this move that you invite us into in your writing, which is to be able to say, there's a part of me with whom I'm in difficulty. There's a part of me that I mistake myself for. It's so kind to be able to see ourselves like this. It's like I'm imagining, Lizzie, it's like being in a fight with someone in your own family but not knowing it was happening and pretending like nothing was going on, the cost of that. And so it seems to me that as we learn to identify that there are parts of ourselves that we have not felt very comfortable making welcome, a huge set of possibilities starts to open up that wasn't there before. Like exactly as you're saying, maybe I could be really soft with this part, even though she has things to say that I don't like. Mm. Maybe I could welcome this part in a way that I've never even thought about welcoming before. Maybe I've always been in a fight with some part of me and trying to get it to go away. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is well and for now, but that for me, the oh look, this thing that happens with me where I get frightened or very often withdrawn is my way, is because I'm fighting with a part that I could be welcoming. That's mm-hmm. the opening that is such a huge liberation and so much kinder than what I usually do.
As you're speaking, Justin, I'm feeling into this thing that I'm going to try and say this. It feels a little bit elusive, but I feel really strongly that there's a way that if we don't do what you're saying and work with this feeling at odds thing, like parts of myself that are contradicting each other or whatever, we have to employ mechanisms to keep that away, to get on with life, basically. And, you know, I know, Justin, we talk about the bigger cultural narratives that exist in our world, like productivity, where something's only valuable if it's got monetary value, or it's within the system of, or it's efficient. You know, these kind of bigger stories that marketing material taps into, i.e. I'm not worth anything if I'm not producing money, for example, or I'm not worth anything if I'm not participating in the economic narrative that's broad and wide in our culture. And I feel like I was just making the link between those being coping mechanisms. So, you know, if I don't produce, if I'm not efficient, I might have to face some of this thing. And so if I can't face some of this, i.e. what comes when I do nothing, what arises to be seen when I'm sitting still or not being efficient or not doing loads of things, if I can't turn towards that, I have to keep doing the doing, and I have to keep doing the efficiency, and I have to keep in the kind of hamster wheel of life. Because when I stop and settle and I don't have the means of facing this kind of thing, I have to bounce back into that. So there's no opening for life to call us to essentially what's maybe ours in the world, what's really my life, not the life that I have culturally been programmed to be invited into by the things that go on around me, the people that say things around me, the communities I'm in. I never get a chance to listen to what's whispering to me, because I don't have a way of turning towards the things that bubble up when I'm not doing the coping mechanisms. And so it strikes me as well that if I don't learn about this, that there are parts of me that aren't culturally, they don't culturally have a place, maybe. If I don't learn that and learn how to work with them, I don't have a chance to step off the bandwagon. I don't have a chance to step off the wheel, which may be making me really stressed or unhappy or feeling like my life is going down the pan and the years are flying by. And this thing that's calling to me just doesn't have a place, because I can't face towards things that aren't made of that.
That's such a great way of talking about it, because it seemed to me, whilst you were talking, that part of the dynamic, this topic that we're talking about, is really about parts of us that got exiled, parts of us that didn't have a place, parts of us ourselves that we learned not to welcome. And what you have written about here is how we might start to welcome those parts back in, even if we have never done that in as long as we can remember in our lives. And by bringing in the cultural surround that we're in, it strikes me that one of the ways that we end up exiling parts is because they don't fit into the narratives, they don't fit into the cultures in which we were born. Like, they might not have been welcome in our family culture, that it, among whoever brought us up, that this part, the angry part, or the joyful part, or the playful part, or the mischievous part, or the part that feels very deeply, might not first have been welcome in our own family system, because any family system has a limit as to what it will tolerate, what it will welcome, partly sometimes out of an attempt to kind of protect. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't, don't bring that part because it's dangerous, don't bring that part because it won't fit in. And that's part of being part of a much wider cultural narrative about what's welcome and what's not. Mm. So it should be no surprise, I think, why this is such important work for all of us to do is that we've all inevitably lost contact with, have to push into the shadows parts of ourselves that didn't have a place or felt dangerous to bring. Coupled with what you said, which is that the wider culture which we're in is generally ill-disposed to the idea that we might recover these parts. Because it's inconvenient, I think, if we start to discover that I don't want to participate in the wider culture in this way or that way. Mm. So being still enough to really feel something and then not try to fix it by making it go away again. You know, one way to deal with an exiled part of ourselves when it starts to come into view is just to try to get it to go away again, to fight it off. Mm. And to even, like you're saying, to even let ourselves feel that might be the dynamic can feel risky because it's not generally welcomed in our wider culture that we do that, because it will change things.
Yeah.
It will change, in all likelihood, what I'm committed to. It will change what feels important. It will deepens our sense of proper care for the flourishing of our lives when we start to do this work with ourselves. And that's really inconvenient to climbing a career ladder or being a consumer. I mean, it can be all of those things that sort of gets us off the rails of the culture. So it's really something to name that why encountering this is difficult. And at the same time, I was thinking about babies when you were speaking. And of course, joyfully remembering what it's like to be around little ones who are whole, who've not got yet into this carving off of parts of themselves in order to fit in. And that there's something really important here about recovering our own wholeness. You know, maybe none of us get to escape this process by which some parts go into the shadows, but we can, if we wish, start to do this work of welcoming back that which for one reason or another got pushed away. And it's really tender but really liberating, because imagine what creativity or what kind of love or what kind of commitment or what kind of gifts we bring to the world when, as you're saying, a part that we've sort of labeled because she's mean, she has mean things to say. You know, if someone kept on pushing me away, I'd have pretty mean things to say, I have to say. You know, and it's only at that moment where I got welcomed back in that I might feel you mean I can really be home here and I could really bring something? That's the internal move that we're talking about here. Mm. And I'm so glad we're talking about it, because I think it's really necessary for our healing, but also for our taking care of things.
Mm. Oh my gosh, so many things came up when you were speaking. I don't quite know where to begin with my response. One thing that arose when you were talking about babies, though, is at the moment we're walking around the place where we are, and Vespa, who is just about to be 10 months, there's a part of her that shows me the parts I've exiled just now that's occurring to me, which is her enthusiasm for people. So we walk around and she shouts and waves at strangers and says hello. She goes, hello. And then they kind of look round and smile and say hello. And this lovely connection is made. And I'm noticing, you know, speaking about cultural normalness, that being really enthusiastic about each other and how much you like people or want to meet people is so not normal. You know, so to bound up to say some and say hello, I'd like to be your friend, or can we just say hello to each other this morning, is not, you know, that's something we have to, we maybe, certainly a person like me who feels very, very social, I've had to kind of dial that down so that I'm not an adult bounding up to people and saying hello. And yet through Vespa I get to do that, and I get to feel the joy of being in a very enthusiastic greeting with somebody that I don't know. And so it just shows me how much, you know, what a gift that is, really, to kind of vicariously have that access to that part of me that is enthusiastic about seeing strangers and saying hello to them or whatever. And the other thing is that arose, Justin, is that the whole, I just want to be really explicit about the gift of knowing that there are parts implicit in the way of looking that is through parts, is that there is a whole. And so somehow that structural liberation of just naming, just having language, having a method to say, oh, that's a part of me. If I can hold this part in my hand that is shut off from being enthusiastic with people, I can look at that, I can work with that, I can hold that, I can bring my warmth to that, and I can do something with it, talk about it, find language for it, welcome it, put it in the light of my heart, whatever I wanted to do with it, I could. But implicit in that is that there's an I doing something. So immediately I get to differentiate myself from that part because of language and because of a structural move I can make with parts of myself that implicitly show me my wholeness and which elaborate on and deepen my sense of my wholeness when I do it. So there's a kind of inherent liberation in that work where I get to see that I'm not that. I don't know about you, but when these things arise in me, like if I feel, I don't know, stinginess, like a kind of retracting avariciousness of, well, what if I haven't got enough or something? When that comes, it feels like all of me. So to distinguish it out and to have it here in front of me, oh, this is my stinginess. Just by doing that, there is a part of me that isn't stingy because I'm holding it here. So there's a part of me that's not stingy, and then there's the whole of me that's all kinds of other things too. But just the act of distinguishing things out feels like a structural kind of way that I don't have to be so convinced by things that I think, things that I feel, attitudes that I have, reactions I have, responses I have. They don't have to have me if I can hold them here. And just the act of holding feels like a real gift of encountering myself really differently than if I'm just had by whatever my reactions and experience and parts are.
Yeah, that's such a powerful way of speaking, Lizzie, and it's a reminder to me first of how powerful language is. Mm. Making a distinction between this and that, because enormously liberating to see, oh, it's not just that, like, I'm stingy, there's a part of me that is, gives a wide open space. For two things that you said, but there's one that I really want to draw attention to. So one is that that's not all of me, but there are many other parts, which is so, it can so help us get out of being stuck in a particular relationship with life or a particular relationship with another person, just to be able to say part of me is this. But the other thing is, like you say, it reminds us that we have a ton of other capacities, like as well as the part of me that's stingy and afraid, there's that of me that is loving, courageous, present, and devoted, mm-hmm. that I can call on here. So it gives us a way of bringing back in qualities that we might lose contact with as we get caught up in the dynamic with one part that we've mistaken for ourselves. And I think that feels so important, because I know, for example, when I've spent long periods of my life feeling very afraid, mm-hmm. and it's such a different move to go, I'm afraid, than to go, part of me is afraid. And it feels much more accurate to say part of me is afraid, and the part of me that's afraid is afraid of this, that, and the other because of, you know, some things I can tell. But there really are also parts of me, that of me, that are fearless, mm-hmm. and stay open. And because, as you say, there's also a self, a something bigger that I am, I'm not completely at the mercy of the interactions between all of these different parts. When we start to see that we have some role in being like the container for all of this, or the ground for all of this, it starts to free us. And I'm remembering now that it struck me whilst you were talking that this also explains so much about our difficulties with other people. Mm. I got onto this when you were talking about Vespa. But, you know, if somebody bounds up to me, who I don't know, in a Vespa-like way and goes, oh, I'm so excited to see you, I want to be your friend. My own difficulty with that has in large part to do with my relationship with a part of me that wants to just bound up to people and love them, which is, that's a part that's been exiled. That's a part of which I get ashamed. Mm. And so very often when I'm relating to someone else in some tricky way, what's more accurate is that I'm relating to a part of me in some tricky way, the part of me that's getting evoked by my contact with them. It's not really about them at all. It's about an internal dynamic. It's here, which is maybe something that we'll take up in another conversation. But it's starting to reveal to me that very often when we think something's going on, like if I think something's going on between me and you, it may be, but the first place to look is also what's going on between different parts of me that I'm bringing into the relationship with you, where I could start to look and start to see if I can soften something. And then I might actually be able to meet you as you are, rather than meet you as a way of trying to not feel parts of me that I don't want to feel.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really lovely way of saying it, Justin. I feel we should definitely take that up in another conversation, because I can just feel the gift of that, the kind of, so when I've got the problem, of course there's a way of having a conversation between you and I, and we can talk about what my problem with you is. But it also would be so helpful even to come at that with a way that I know I'm up to something too. It kind of levels the playing field already. That I've not just got a problem with you and you're not doing something wrong and that's the end of it. I know I've got a part in this too. Like, what a different way of coming at a conversation that feels like way more hopeful than just you changing, which frankly, we all know that changing people is a little bit of a non-starter, if you like. So it feels like an empowering way and a much more possible way to be in relationship with each other. To say that we have a part that's playing a part here. So I'm looking at the time and realizing it's probably time for us to end. And I just want to say, Justin, this is such a gift, and I feel very opened and very kind of curious about things even more deeply. And I'm really grateful that we get to read pieces of our work sometimes as well. Or work feels like, well, I think it is the right word actually, although we have a cultural story about what the word work means. But it's a really big gift to have an expression for these inquiries that naturally come from our practices as well. So thank you, Justin, for joining from God knows where. And I think you're in Wales somewhere or something, aren't you? And I'm in Scotland. So we're doing a kind of United Kingdom stretch tour, which is lovely. And we will be back here next week at 9 o'clock again. With something chosen by Justin. And just to say thank you all, and like I can see on Facebook there's been lots of comments, so I'm going to look at them now as well. I'm excited to hear what you've all been saying, and we will see you back here next week. So thank you.
We will indeed. Thank you, Lucy.
Bye.
Bye.